Good evening, folks, and welcome back again on this Saturday, the 21st day of August, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I guess the only way to begin tonight is to talk about one of the biggest military disasters in the history of the formerly free United States, and it goes so far beyond mere senile dementia or mere criminal negligence that it's hard even to begin talking about it without using words that begin with treason. And since there's been so much that's come out that even the waste stream now is starting to admit that, maybe we'd better start more or less at the beginning. Not, of course, at the beginning of the treason. That goes way back, as you regular listeners no doubt already know. But at the beginning of the things that have come out lately.
What must be what?
As the week began, it was already clear that this was one of the worst military debacles in American history. And one of the early indicators was the new Taliban Air Force showing off their acquisitions, courtesy of the Biden regime, and no doubt his communist Chinese masters, too, and happily showing off their fleet of new helicopters that Uncle Sam and, of course, the American taxpayers kindly left to them as they fled the country and evidently abandoned all kinds of wonderful armament that we'll probably see sometime later on down the road. The Times of Israel covers, though, does say it's not clear if any of those helicopters seized at the Kandahar airport are actually airworthy. Although later in the week, that too looked more like an understatement. The predominant video footage, though, seems to be chaos at the international airport in Kabul. Let's start with at least part of Zero Hedge's coverage. On Monday, it says the press reported shocking scenes of thousands of, quote, utterly desperate Afghan civilians fleeing their homes and mobbing the Kabul International Airport tarmac in the wake of the rapid Taliban takeover of Kabul. American advisors were shocked, shocked, I tell you, to realize that the Taliban would take advantage of the, is there a kind adjective in this list here? Disastrous, incompetent, shameful? Well, the adjectives continued to flow from various sources around the world describing the debacle in Afghanistan. According to the Wall Street Journal and other English-language media outlets, says the summary, at least three people have died Monday during the frenzied struggle to leave. An update by just before 11 a.m. Eastern Time says the death toll has now risen to at least seven, including reports of two armed men shot by U.S. troops. A group of 60 nations, though, has asked the Taliban to pretty please allow any refugees who desire to leave the country to do so without inflicting harm on them or their families. Meanwhile, American troops are now attempting to secure and provide order at Karzai International Airport as military airlifts of American personnel continue. And shots, as we mentioned, have been fired as American troops arrive to find the security situation spiraling out of control, potentially making safe airport operations, including flights in and out, next to impossible if things don't return to some degree of sanity. There are multiple videos online, too, of people literally so frenzied to try to get out of the area by any means necessary that people trying to flee the Taliban are holding on to the landing gear of the C-17s evacuating Americans from Kabul, grabbing at the outsides of the airplane as it taxis for takeoff. And when the plane takes off and the landing gear retracts, you can see people falling from the plane to the ground and their deaths from 1,000 feet in the air. Stunningly incompetent so-called Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Sunday, though, on the Talking Heads networks, insisted that the scene in Afghanistan is not at all comparable to the fall of Saigon, and he attempted to divert blame for the Taliban takeover to, guess who? The senile one's predecessor, the guy they stole the election from, Donald Trump, not to mention Republicans in general, and of course Afghan security forces. Saying that the images now emerging from Afghanistan, including personnel being airlifted, one way or the other, out of the embassy in Kabul, are standard operating procedure. Quote, this is being done in a very deliberate way, he said. It's being done in an orderly way.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
And it's being done with American forces there to make sure we can do it in a safe way, he said, on ABC News this week, Sunday morning. But at least this time around, host Jonathan Carl wasn't completely sipping the Kool-Aid. He pushed back, saying, respectfully, not much about what we're seeing seems too orderly or standard operating procedure. And he added that just last month, the Biden Fuhrer said that, quote, under no circumstance, and those were his words, under no circumstance would the U.S. personnel, embassy personnel, be airlifted out of Kabul in a replay of the scenes that we saw in Saigon in 1975. So he asked, isn't that exactly what we are seeing now? I mean, even the images are evocative of what happened in Vietnam. But, said Blinken, no, no, let's take a step back. This is manifestly not Saigon. No, folks, it's 45 years later, halfway around the world, and arguably, perhaps even more idiotic. But the common denominator may be that it looks like another big win for communism. Since even the left-leaning BBC wrote this over the weekend, Afghanistan, they said in the headline, how the Taliban gained ground so quickly. The speed of the Taliban advance in Afghanistan, it begins, appears to have taken many, especially in the Biden regime, by surprise, and regional capitals seem to be falling like dominoes. The momentum is clearly with the insurgents, while the Afghan government struggles to keep its grip on power. And this week, one leaked U.S. intelligence, SIC, report estimated that Kabul could come under attack within weeks, and the government could collapse within 90 days. So they ask, how did it all unravel so quickly? Given that the U.S. and its NATO allies, including the U.K., they admit, have spent the best part of the last 20 years, and taxpayer dollars that are now counted in trillions, not even hundreds of billions anymore, and certainly a whole bunch of lives, training and equipping so-called Afghan security forces. Countless British and American generals, they say, have claimed to have created a more powerful and capable Afghan army, but those are promises that today appear to be pretty empty. This assessment, though, from an American CIA officer, may be a bit more accurate. Brian Dean Wright, former CIA foreign operations veteran, wrote on Sunday that Joe Biden's Afghan policy speech back on July 8th may become, quote, the most infamous and devastating press conference ever held by an American president. Or I guess we have to add, even somebody pretending to be one. He quoted the Biden Fuhrer in that speech to say that when I announced our drawdown in April, I said we'd be out by September, and we're on track to meet that target. Our military mission in Afghanistan will conclude on August 31st. But clearly, says this story, the Taliban are now on the cusp of declaring victory in Kabul, far ahead of that date marker, and certainly very far ahead of the initially conceived September 11th symbolic mission accomplished date. And the author backs up that point via an exchange with a reporter from just a bit over a month ago. Is the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan now inevitable? The marionette in chief was asked. No, it's not, said the senile one. Why? And here I'll try to quote it accurately, even though it sounds like the usual Biden incompetence. Quote, because you, the Afghan troops, have 300,000 well-equipped, as well-equipped as any army in the world, and an air force against something like 75,000 Taliban. It is not inevitable, unquote, and yeah. But, says the piece, other U.S. intelligence agencies, who claimed just 4 days ago that Kabul could fall within 90 days, have now revised that figure to, 72 hours. But it's looking more and more, concludes Zero Hedge's summary, like the Taliban will overrun the capital in maybe just 24 hours, perhaps not even enough time for all U.S. diplomatic personnel to get out of there. And as the week wore on and the lies just kept getting revealed like pus out of a seeping wound, it became clearer and clearer that this wasn't mere incompetence, but outright treason. The buck stops here, said the Biden Fuhrer, in a speech he gave Monday to compound the lies about the disaster, who then said, well, no, really, the buck stops everywhere else, especially that guy before me and all those other people who didn't cover my you-know-what, whereupon he proceeded to turn tail, run, and head back to a vacation at Camp David. Let somebody that's not senile handle it. Yeah, like they've already been. Literally, folks, you see this kind of incompetence writ large on the world stage, and you have to figure allies everywhere are starting to wonder, come on, how bad does it have to get? But especially in places like Taiwan, where they can see that if they ever needed American help, at this rate, it wouldn't be worth having. In the most important speech of his, so far at least, alleged presidency, Biden blames everybody but himself for failure in Afghanistan, say the headlines. Well, with one exception. He shouldered the blame to the Afghan people, Trump, all kinds of prior administrations, except the Obama regime. He took no questions, even as the press corps erupted in urgent questions, and then walked away, whereupon the video feed was abruptly cut.
What must be what?
The closest he got to saying anything actually true was when he bluntly acknowledged that the collapse of Afghanistan did in fact, quote, unfold more quickly than we anticipated. But other U.S. officials, as Zero Hedge summarized it, were said to be livid over the botched Afghanistan withdrawal, saying they had all kinds of time to prepare to evacuate Americans from Afghanistan and simply blew it. They quoted Reuters to note that five anonymous U.S. officials had told the outlet that, quote, weeks before the Washington-backed Afghan government collapsed, the U.S. military wanted a bigger role in helping to evacuate Afghans at risk because they worked for the United States, adding, the officials believed that a more orderly withdrawal would have been likely. We could have done a lot more to help, said one. The administration waited too long. Another person, familiar with the situation, said the Biden regime was behind the curve, to put it mildly, as things deteriorated in Afghanistan. Quote, every decision has come too late and in reaction to events that make the subsequent decision obsolete, said the source. Local embassy employees who've been at home for weeks were left to make their own way to the airport, where many of them are still waiting for evacuation. And as the week rolled to a close, folks, that number may still be in the tens of thousands, but who knows, because the State Department doesn't seem to. Said one U.S. military official who served in Afghanistan, quote, frustrated, disgusted, and in disbelief today. Why, the blame-shifting and finger-pointing was so over the top that even CNN's Biden apologist and resident sycophant Jake Tapper had to say, quote, he said the buck stopped with him in a speech full of finger-pointing, after finally breaking his silence on the calamitous withdrawal from Afghanistan. But amidst all the smoke and the misdirection, and even revelations of bodies not only falling out of airplanes, but being discovered dead in wheel wells and the like, there seems to have been plenty of room to bury the lead as well. For example, the Daily Mail had stories about a hero pilot who took off with literally hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of Afghans crammed into a military C-17. They just kept getting on board. Finally, the pilot and crew decided, let's just take off. It was said to be the biggest crowd of human beings ever stuffed into an airplane that got airborne. Some reports say 640 or more. Others say as many as 800 may have been on board that C-17. Americans, though, including contractors, military, embassy personnel, and so forth, many of them are still waiting at the airport or hiding somewhere else and trying to get there. The Pentagon, in another story, said their goal now is to evacuate between 5,000 and 9,000 people per day from the airfield at Kabul. Many of them, of course, are being targeted by the Taliban, so it may take a while to get those that can survive out of there. Buried in one of the Daily Mail stories, though, was this revealing tidbit. Monday night, Biden authorized $500 million from an emergency fund to meet the, quote, unexpected urgent refugee needs stemming from that massive FUBAR in Afghanistan, including what are called Afghan Special Immigration Visa Applicants, or SIVs. The U.S., says the Daily Mail, is said to be preparing to begin evacuating thousands of Afghan applicants for special immigration visas, those SIVs, because they risk retaliation from Taliban insurgents who think they might have worked for the U.S. government. Which leads me to these pretty cogent-sounding observations from Hal Turner and his radio show about some of the many things that appear wrong with this great big picture. The headline says, while American citizens remain trapped in Afghanistan, there are plane loads of fighting-age men, a.k.a. refugees, coming to places like Texas and Wisconsin. What, you mean in addition to the thousands of invaders coming right across the southern border? Yeah, he says something is more than wrong with this picture, and he has a great big picture showing hundreds of men, plane loads of refugees coming to the USA, but one can't help but note that in the pictures there are no women or children on those planes, just fighting-age men. And by the way, they're coming to Fort Bliss in Texas and Fort McCoy in Wisconsin. By midweek, we'd reached this point, where it looks like Big Brother is about ready to leave tens of thousands of Americans to die at the hands of the Biden regime's ideological buddies in Afghanistan. So here's another update from Saigonistan and what may be the American empire's most stunningly inept failure yet. And we'll start with a bit of counterpoint. Zero Hedge, quoting reports from Reuters and Bloomberg, says the number of people who've been evacuated from the Kabul airport has risen to over 5,000 in the past 24 hours, while the death toll from the Taliban's latest outburst of violence continues to rise. The Daily Mail headline, though, updated at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the 18th of August, says evacuation flights out of Kabul are taking off near empty after the Taliban formed a ring of steel around the airport and has blocked tens of thousands of desperate Afghans, and who knows how many Westerners, from entering the facility since they're unable to get through the crush. Flights bound for Germany, Australia, the Netherlands, France, and Italy, which between them vowed to rescue thousands of people stranded by the Biden regime, have been taking off with just a few dozen people on board, despite having capacity to take hundreds. In one shocking case, they say, a German plane that could seat 150 people departed Kabul on Tuesday with just 7 on board. Meanwhile, Sean Hannity for Fox reported on Tuesday night that there are at least 10,000 to as many as 40,000 Americans still trapped inside Afghanistan. And a number of sources seem to indicate that the American government, or what now passes for it, isn't giving American citizens any particular priority in getting out of there. Evidently, a note sent by the regime to American citizens still trapped told them, please make your way to Hamid Karzai International Airport at this time, but be advised that the United States government cannot guarantee your security as you attempt to make the trip. Which inclines your host to hearken back to a quote from the Biden Fuhrer made on July 8th that seems to have been getting a lot of renewed interest, at least from the honest alternative media, over the last couple of days. Does anybody else remember when the senile one said so presciently that this is nothing, no, nothing at all, like the fall of Saigon, and that one thing we won't see is Americans on the roof of the U.S. Embassy there waiting for a helicopter?
The Taliban is not the North Vietnamese army. They're not remotely comparable in terms of capability. There's going to be no circumstance where you see people being lifted off the roof of a embassy of the United States from Afghanistan. It is not at all comfortable.
And I guess on that score, we've got to give him a tip of the hat, because maybe he was telling the truth. These Americans had better not count on anybody lifting them off of the roof of anything anytime soon. President Donald Trump was making the rounds last night, too. He told Hannity this is like the southern border and the U.S. invasion from the south, but way worse in the way that Biden's handling Afghanistan. Blaming the Bush family for the decision to go into the Middle East, he said, quote, it was a horrible decision going into the Middle East. I know the Bush family will not be happy, but I believe it was the worst decision in the history of our country when we decided to go into the Middle East. And he said that he thought Joe Biden had returned to the White House because he's been getting bad press, which he's not used to, your host adds, given that they're bought and paid for, quote, and I don't believe he's even in charge. But President Trump wasn't done, suggesting that the Taliban is all about negotiation and that they've been doing these kinds of things for a very long time. He added,
we're being set up. They have all of those people. And in a certain way, I guarantee you, they consider them to be hostages. And let's see what happens over the coming weeks. But this is not a story that just ended today or yesterday. This is a story that's going to go on for a long time, and it could be a very, very bad ending.
And meanwhile, the web is full of atrocities being committed by the Taliban throughout Afghanistan. Concerning the violence in the streets, said one, hello, world. Watch what happened actually in Kabul. This is human tragedy. Taliban take people out of their house, and the whole world is watching and doing nothing. Journalists have been beaten in the street, say others, while Afghan girls cry for help outside the Kabul airport fence. And it would appear that a lot of Americans, if they have the sense to stay hidden and haven't already been captured or killed, are doing exactly that. And while this story actually came out a day or two ago, I guess the newly armed Taliban are still, one way or another, showing their gratitude to their ideological comrades in the Biden regime. Because while they were originally quick to humiliate the Biden crime family, taking the country over just days after U.S. forces departed, and they're now fully in control, they do appear to be set on pursuing at least one of America's core progressive tenets, the confiscation of weapons from the peons. Said Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, Taliban fighters in the Afghan capital started collecting weapons from civilians on Monday, saying that the people no longer need them for personal protection. Quote, we understand people kept weapons for personal safety. They can now feel safe. We are not here to harm innocent civilians, unquote, said the official to Reuters. After which, the Taliban promptly not only continued their gun confiscation, but began to murder, rape, and kill. You see, they know how to play the Clintonian lie game, too. Turns out that innocent civilians aren't necessarily what you might have thought they were. As Spike Cohen summarized it, yeah, give us your guns. We will protect you. Says every government that's about to commit mass murder ever. The story also quotes city resident Saad Mosheni, director of the Mobi Group media company, who said on Twitter the Taliban soldiers had immediately come to his company to inquire about weapons kept by his security team, to the point that very soon nobody but the Taliban, courtesy of the chaotic departure of U.S. forces, which let the Taliban take possession of some of the most advanced U.S. weaponry, will be fully armed, ensuring that the plans of the Taliban and their Biden buddies, whether cooperative or just plain incompetent, will proceed on schedule. How long now until the senile one utters the fateful words, mission accomplished? And I guess our fall of Saigonistan update wouldn't be complete without at least a word from Biden's Chinese handlers and puppet masters. And you certainly can't blame them now that this catastrophic level of incompetence has showed the world exactly what they're dealing with for turning their eyes again to Taiwan. From the Epoch Times, China carried out assault drills near Taiwan on August 17th with fighter jets, anti-submarine aircraft, and combat ships exercising off the southwest and southeast of the island in what the country's armed forces said was a response to external interference. In a brief statement released Tuesday, the PLA, Eastern Theater Command, said the drills were using actual troops and, quote, recent U.S.-Taiwan provocations severely violated the peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. So now that their CCP puppet has the U.S. focused on the debacle in Afghanistan, maybe it's time for them to say, okay, enough of this Taiwan stuff, let's just pull the plug. So let's step back next and connect a few dots. I saw these comments midweek in a piece from the Daily Mail about how the buck stops anywhere else. Biden is pointing the finger at Trump and the Afghan army and the Pentagon and the CIA are taking aim at each other. And basically, hey, in the Biden regime, nobody takes responsibility for anything, especially the potential deaths of tens of thousands of Americans that were abandoned, along with a whole bunch of allies, when the Biden regime did what they do so well, sell out and violate their oaths. On Sunday, says the piece, he admitted that the withdrawal had been hard and messy and, yes, far from perfect. And that's pretty much a description of the entire regime. Then claimed that the developments of the last week show how he was right all along. And he said the following. Listen to this carefully. American troops cannot and should not be fighting in a war and dying in a war that Afghan forces are not willing to fight for themselves. Let's pause there for a second. Is the same thing true about American troops not fighting and dying for Americans who aren't willing to fight for themselves against a regime that has usurped the Constitution, is destroying the Bill of Rights, and now intends to poison every last one of both the military and the civilians unless they fight back? From there, I need to digress for just a second, but not really. Same subject, different interview. As you're probably noticing, this debacle was so bad even some of Biden's leftist allies are starting to think, ooh, we better not go down with this sinking ship. Among them, ABC News' Steffi Stephanopoulos, with apologies to the late Rush Limbaugh, who actually seems to have decided to hold the senile one's feet to the fire. The clip that seems to have gotten the most press coverage had to do with Biden snapping when asked about Afghans falling from airplanes. He got visibly angry and committed another Bidenism, but your host hardly thought that was the important point. More interesting, when it came to turning over the country to the Taliban, was Stephanopoulos noting that while Biden may have agreed that the Taliban could take over the country, it was still unlikely. You didn't put a timeline on it, he said. You just said flat out, it's highly unlikely the Taliban would take over. Yeah, said Biden. Well, the question is whether or not the idea that the Taliban would take over was premised on the notion that that somehow the 300,000 troops we had trained and equipped was going to just collapse. They were going to give up. I don't think anybody anticipated that. Now, folks, I'm going to suggest that that was a bald-faced lie. You know, that the Afghan armed forces would just give up, or for that matter, maybe the American armed forces would just give up and allow the country to be turned over to Joe's Taliban in Washington. A bunch of unelected scumbags who openly and brazenly stole the election, then lied about it, and are now gang-raping the Constitution and threatening the livelihood, future, and literal freedom of every single American drawing breath. And the Afghan military, surprise, 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 gave up, turned over their weapons while the Taliban marched in and took over. But no, nobody anticipated that. Well, we just watched the American military stand by for the complete Bolshevik takeover of a formerly free nation. And now each one of them is being threatened with a Zyklon B injection into their own bodies. And still, they've done nothing. There's nothing we're seeing now in Afghanistan, or have seen for the last several months in Biden's stand, that wasn't totally predictable. So let's go back now to that extended quote from the Sunday show and see if it doesn't begin to fall into place. The rest of the quote says, "We gave them every chance to determine their own future. What we could not provide them was the will to fight for that future," unquote. And I certainly hope a whole lot of U.S. military troops are listening to that and saying, "Hey, haven't we had enough?" This line, too, also from the same speech, pretty well nails it. I'm going to replace the word Afghan military in here with the American military. "Political leaders gave up," he said, after which he added, "The American military collapsed, sometimes without trying to fight." An almost quote. And gee, folks, isn't that prescient? And we'll pick it up when we get back from the bottom of the hour break with some even more damning revelations that came out awfully late. Stay with us. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. And yes, we spent the entire first part just reviewing the background for one of the most important and disastrous debacles in American military or diplomatic history. And as the evidence continues to pile up, your host will suggest one more time that this goes way, way beyond mere senile dementia and, yes, even criminal negligence. The only real explanation for the level of perfidy we're seeing here is outright treason. And it's not like we didn't know that this guy was a communist Chinese party puppet all along anyway. They're salivating over the $1 trillion plus in mineral reserves that they're now going to move in and take over. But as Friday rolled around, this was the story that was appearing in headlines all over the world. Not just the alternative media, which has been on top of this story since before the waste stream figured out there was a problem, but in fact, even Fox, and as it turns out, the Brits, in places like the Daily Mail. "They knew," said one of the headlines. Leaked State Department memo warned in advance of the Afghan collapse. The Daily Mail says Biden was warned last month of the impending Taliban catastrophe, and a July 13 cable provides damning evidence that Biden was warned in advance by his own officials about the impending disaster. Using a special dissent channel within the State Department, the cable sent July 13th to Secretary of State Antony Blinken and other officials warned of rapid territorial gains by the Taliban and the subsequent collapse of the Afghan security forces and offered suggestions about how to speed up the evacuation and mitigate the obvious crisis slated to ensue, according to two sources for the Wall Street Journal. In total, 23 U.S. Embassy staffers, all Americans, signed the cable, which was given a special rush status because of its importance. And that followed right on the heels of this story from the day before. The Biden regime actually canceled a Trump program put in place to oversee the evacuation of U.S. citizens stationed overseas in case of an emergency. You know, the kind of emergency that the Biden regime has now precipitated in Afghanistan. The Biden regime, though, canceled the Trump program back in June, about which wrote Alberto Miguel Fernandez, "Interesting, embarrassing timing, to say the least. The Biden State Department moved in June to cancel a program overseeing the protection and evacuation of American citizens stationed overseas in the case of an emergency, just as the Taliban was taking over Afghanistan." This, says the Washington Free Beacon, according to an internal State Department memo obtained by the Washington Free Beacon and multiple sources familiar with the matter. The Biden State Department moved to dissolve the Trump-era crisis response program, according to that internal memo and sources familiar, which was marked sensitive but unclassified, signed by Deputy Secretary Brian McKeon, which approved the, quote, "discontinuation of the establishment and termination of the Contingency and Crisis Response Bureau, a.k.a. CCR, a new State Department entity created during the Trump administration to coordinate emergency response services," some might suggest exactly what might be needed now, overseas, especially if you were planning on an orderly troop withdrawal, perhaps. The CCR Bureau was established late last year by then Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and in a notification sent to Congress in October and obtained by the Free Beacon, the Trump administration said the new Bureau would provide, quote, aviation logistics and medical support capabilities for the department's operational bureaus, thus enhancing the Secretary's ability to protect American citizens overseas in connection with overseas evacuations in the aftermath of a natural or, listen to this part, man-made disaster. From there, let's move on next to Joe's Jihadis, because the Taliban, according to a number of sources, are now the best armed and equipped terrorist group on planet Earth. And maybe that does mean outside of Biden's brown shirts, you know, the door-to-door troops, being configured to go door-to-door and poke the peons and take away their liberty teeth. Back, though, to Joe's Jihadis, and this brief summary comes from the Epoch Times, under the headline, Facts Matter. $83 billion was spent on the Afghan army and now ends up in the hands of the Taliban. Everything from guns and ammo to rockets, Humvees, tanks, and of course, some Black Hawk helicopters. And videos online seem to suggest those weapons are already being used against American citizens, tens of thousands of them perhaps, abandoned in places like Kabul. And isn't it interesting that while thousands of Afghans are fleeing the country, seemingly being given precedence over Americans that may or may not make it out alive, the United States government is opening its borders and setting up temporary housing for them in places like Texas and Wisconsin. Ironically, the vast majority of them, maybe 90% according to most estimates, are military-aged men. Wonder what they've got in mind for their future. And on the subject of incompetence that strains credulity, I do think it's fair to point out that Communist China seems intent on rushing in where the United States and before that the Soviets failed and picking up the estimated $1 trillion worth of minerals, especially rare earth minerals, that are in Afghanistan. Thank you, Joe. And here all the U.S. seemed to be getting out of there all this time was heroin from poppy fields. But wait, there's more, adds Jim Hoft. During their totally pathetic press conference on Wednesday at the Pentagon, traitorous Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and General Woke Milley admitted that Afghan pilots, did you catch that? They still had a few, at least, in the Air Force up until the weekend, flew several U.S. aircraft out of the country. Well, that sounds good, right? Trouble is, they think they may have been flown to places like Uzbekistan or maybe Tajikistan, but they're not sure. Looks like tanks, Humvees, and helicopters weren't all they lost. They also have no idea how many of them were taken. Jim Hoff concludes thusly, not only was this a complete disaster with thousands of Americans trapped in Afghanistan while these idiots had no plan on how to rescue them, they can't even keep track of their own aircraft. And you might think that's enough incompetence for one day, but there's this too from The Verge about how the U.S. military created a vast database of biometric data. Anybody else see that there might be a problem with that? One report suggests it had a goal of 25 million entries, all allegedly as part of their effort to track terrorists, which now, of course, in America includes you, but this time in Afghanistan. Now that the U.S. has withdrawn from the country, leaving it openly to the terrorists, reports from both The Intercept and Reuters suggest that the Taliban could potentially use it, like they're using other weapons left behind, to target allies also left behind. As The Intercept puts it, the collection of biometric data was primarily billed as a military project, but Afghan civilians who work for U.S. embassies and the broader coalition government were also reportedly included in the database. And the biometric information that could be on file for all of these people seems to vary. What's called the Handheld Interagency Identity Detection Equipment, or HIDE, used by the military, collects everything from iris scans to fingerprints, along with identifying biographical information, according to sources from The Intercept. And those devices, too, are now reportedly in the possession of Joe's Jihadis, the Taliban. There's some question whether the Taliban would have the skills and other equipment necessary to actually access and take action with the data that's been collected for them. Still, though, if or when it happens, you know what the Biden regime's going to say. Hey, we didn't think it could happen so fast. And besides, it's Trump's fault, not ours. So however urgent the immediate risk is, says the piece, the possibility of widespread abuse of the collected data still makes evading biometric scanning and securing civilian digital identities all the more important, which is why what are called human rights organizations, we used to call them constitutionalists in this country, folks, have published warnings about biometric recognition and the protection of digital identities. By Friday, it seemed clear that the worst of those fears, though, was already coming to pass as the Taliban began to carry out door-to-door manhunts for people that were on those various lists that they were looking for, and you can probably guess what their fate will be. According to Christian Nelleman, head of the Norwegian Center for Global Analysis, which provides information and intelligence to the United Nations, speaking to the BBC on Thursday, quote, they have lists of individuals, and even within the very first hours of moving into Kabul, they began a search of former government employees, especially in intelligence services and the special forces units. In a statement released Thursday, the G7 foreign ministers joined the chorus, saying they too are, quote, deeply concerned by reports of violent reprisals in parts of Afghanistan. Nelleman said that the Taliban have a, quote, more advanced intelligence system when moving into all of the major Afghan cities, including the capital of Kabul, and that could not only lead to mass executions, but also a mass reveal of the intelligence networks, plural, that the West has provided to Afghanistan. No wonder the Allies have decided maybe the United States isn't such a reliable partner.
I'm Satan reincarnated.
But if there's anything these revelations this week help to clarify, it's that a regime which is willing to let who knows how many thousands of Americans die in Afghanistan, while mandating a poison poke at home, doesn't really care about any of the peons. On Tuesday, in a piece picked up by the Burning Platform, and Barnhart pointed out that the FDA knew and admitted back in October of 2020 about huge numbers of deadly side effects associated with the poison poke, the not vaccine, from clotting, heart damage, and Guillain-Barré syndrome to encephalomyelitis, convulsions, seizures, and strokes, not to mention sterility and massive numbers of spontaneous abortions. But interestingly, they didn't bother to tell anybody, so they're still going to mandate these death-dealing injections into every American that doesn't have the strength to fight back. On Thursday, Natural News reported the groundbreaking postmortem study of the corpse of a man who had received the poke, just one of them in this case, with the mRNA COVID-1984 not vaccine prior to his death just 4 weeks later. The autopsy revealed the spike protein in every organ tested, including the man's brain, lungs, trachea, kidney, and heart. In short, his whole body was overrun with high loads of vax-induced spike proteins. Finally, from the Stupid Is As Stupid Does files, three fully vaccinated U.S. senators have now tested positive for what they are supposedly protected from. I gotta ask it, are you willing to believe a breakthrough case when it's a rate of well over 3%? Do the easy math, folks. They obviously can't. Worse still, these idiots like Chicken Pooper of Colorado are still telling people, if you haven't gotten your shot, get it today and get the booster, too, when it's available.
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
Sadly, though, mass murder by Zyklon B injection, or the modern equivalent, isn't just limited to satanic traitors in the U.S. On Tuesday, Australian tyrant David Andrews made it clear that his government was only beginning to enact tyrannical measures, and you muzzled slaves had better keep your masks on and shut up.
There will be no removal of masks to consume alcohol outdoors. So you will no longer be able to remove your mask to drink a cocktail at a pop-up beer garden on a footpath as part of a pub crawl.
But this power-drunk tyrant was just getting rolling.
But in any event, there'll be no more drinking alcohol with your mask off in those circumstances. That will simply not be permitted.
And you slaves had better learn who's boss.
Playgrounds, basketball courts, skate parks and exercise equipment, despite the fact that it's outdoors, will be closed from 11:59 p.m. tonight.
And we haven't forgotten your religion either.
Religious broadcasts, they'll be further limited.
And if we think of anything else we feel like prohibiting, we'll do that next. But when it comes to tyranny, the far leftist dictator of New Zealand wasn't about to be left behind. And their latest idiotic nationwide lockdown went into effect after one, that's one, O-N-E person tested positive for the Booga Booga flu.
Stay local and do not congregate. Don't talk to your neighbours. Please keep to your bubbles. It comes down again to those very simple principles.
Even if you know they're total bullshit.
We know from overseas cases of the Delta variant that it can be spread by people simply walking past one another.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
So keep those movements outside to the bare minimum. Wear a mask and make sure you keep up that physical distancing.
Or else, you Kiwi slaves. Oh, yeah. And in Australia, they're already openly building the COVID concentration camps. Courtesy of Julian Conradson at the Gateway Pundit and the master plan blueprints for Australia's mandatory COVID quarantine center. which is set to open its first phase in early 2022 and be the second of such facilities in the country when it's finished, able to hold up to 3,000 formerly free Australians in isolation. Right straight out of George Orwell's 1984, says the piece, the camp will be named the Center for National Resilience, and government health, SICK, officials are calling the experimental poke the golden ticket to freedom. But back to reality, says TGP, police officers accompanied by the military have already been coming to people's homes and taking them away as they conduct what are laughably called random welfare checks and follow-up tips about rule breakers who've been ratted out by their fellow citizens. East German Stasi style. With all of that on the table today, I saw another piece from Brandon Smith at Alt Market that certainly asked some questions that have been on your host's mind as well. My first instinct, he writes, has been to ignore the circus surrounding Biden's apparent bungle of the troop exit from Afghanistan, primarily because it seems to distract from the much bigger danger of despotic COVID mandates and the various anti-constitutional mark of the beast type vaccine passports that Biden and, more importantly, his handlers are trying to push forward right now. That said, though, he says, I've received a number of requests from readers to talk about the situation. Certainly certain aspects of the pullout seem more than suspicious, but the basic assumption here is that Biden is senile and that his handling of the exit is tainted by downright stupidity. But maybe there's more to this than meets the eye, and certainly your host has been suggesting that as well. First, though, he says, it's important to dispel a propaganda narrative being circulated by big media. It's typical leftist gaslighting. The conservatives are being critical of the situation in order to keep troops stationed in Afghanistan. One can be in favor, he writes, of a troop drawdown and still be critical of the mishandling of it. Because frankly, the U.S. should have been out of Afghanistan years ago. I don't think it's too much to ask to have a concrete plan in place to mitigate damage to those people who relied on our presence to protect them from the Taliban. After all, it was Barack Hussein Obama who first promised an exit from Afghanistan way back in 2014, claiming the combat mission was over. Yeah, that was another great big whopping lie. And to be fair, he writes, the Trump administration did the exact same thing, platforming the idea of a major drawdown or a full exit, and then instituting troop surges instead. But at least conservatives were more critical of his backpedaling at the time. Trump finally committed to troop reductions in 2020, but most of that to be after the November election, leaving 2,500 military personnel in Afghanistan, along with 17,000 private contractors. The real shock, though, has been the speed of Biden's exit agenda after Trump already removed the bulk of U.S. troops. This rapid drawdown has included cutting almost all U.S. troops and cutting private contractor numbers by at least 60%. And all of this has been undertaken over the span of just a couple of months, allowing the Taliban to overrun the least secure provinces surrounding the capital of Kabul and then overrunning Kabul itself. A panic then ensued among various Afghan citizens with anti-Taliban sentiments, and it's hitting a fever pitch with now hundreds of thousands looking for any way to escape. Certainly, it's been common practice of multiple U.S. administrations to pay lip service to public concerns over the endless war in Afghanistan, telling people, oh yeah, we're going to get out of there real soon now, then shrugging their shoulders when they're caught lying. Perhaps, he says, that's why Biden's rushed and haphazard removal of troops from the region over the span of a mere few months feels so downright bizarre. But it's the chaotic manner in which Biden executed the troop drawdown that's increasingly suspect. It feels more like a desperate retreat in the face of an overwhelming attack than a controlled exit with a defensive plan in the face of a limited insurgency. Or, perhaps more disturbing, and here's the real nub, folks, it feels like Biden needs those troops and resources elsewhere, and in a hurry. But what are they needed for, and why? Brandon then goes on to note that a real exit strategy should have taken at least another year to complete, with a secure zone surrounding Kabul and the provinces bordering Pakistan, plans to evacuate civilians and so forth, all of which would have been more meaningful, but still should have been pursued years ago, and it's far too late now. And yes, folks, it looks like Trump did have some of those plans in place. The Biden regime scrapped them for some obscure reason. Understand, he continues, that the U.S. was never going to win the war in Afghanistan, and regardless of how many planes, tanks, and drones a conventional military might bring to bear, eventually they will lose over time by pure attrition in the face of a guerrilla resistance. Understand, he adds, that it really wasn't the troop drawdown that opened the door to the recent Taliban offensive so much as the drawdown of the 17,000 private contractors, a lot of them ex-military, in the country, which was the major force keeping the Taliban at bay post-election. All of which brings us to the current day, he says, in which Afghans are piling onto the landing gear of planes trying to get out of Air Force bases outside Kabul, while the capital is overtaken by Taliban fighters in scenes very much reminiscent of the fall of Saigon. You've even got Afghan mothers throwing their babies over barbed wire fences to soldiers on the other side. Multiple governments, though, didn't even have time to evacuate their embassies as the Taliban moved in. Women are quickly dusting off their 20-year-old burqas, and people who ran for office are now being left behind to be slaughtered, while untold numbers of U.S. armaments, as we've been talking about, have been left to fall into the hands of Joe's jihadis. Nope, it certainly doesn't make sense, and that's why we ought to examine some of the theories, at least, as to why this was so catastrophically mishandled. I'm not buying, he says, the Biden is incompetent story, because it's just too simplistic. Everybody knows that, has been paying attention. This seems over the top, even for an idiot like that. And it certainly doesn't take the bigger picture into account. Biden's a Muppet, a mascot, a front man for the public to love or hate, and probably a communist Chinese party puppet as well. That's all he is. Yet, he can barely read from a teleprompter. And it's clearly his puppeteers who make the big decisions, not the Biden Fuhrer. These are all evil people, but they're not this incompetent. So we better ask the important questions. Why now, and quo bene, who benefits? After decades of presidents lying to us about mission accomplished and impending troop exits, why is Biden suddenly committing to an exit strategy in the most hysterical way possible? Oh, and why choose 9/11 as an end date, too? Is there a not-so-subtle message here? Or maybe another big event on the way? Certainly wouldn't be the first time, or even the 11th. And furthermore, he notes, not only are there scenes here that remind me of the fall of Saigon, but I can't help but think of Benghazi as well. There's a rotten smell to this event, as if the goal is to deliberately spark an inferno in order to hide another motive in the smoke. To be sure, he says, the insanity in Afghanistan is quite a distraction away from the implementation of the vaccine passports, a.k.a. Mark of the Beast, and other illegal mandates in the U.S., with an increasing number of corporations and city and state governments all trying to enforce them, unconstitutional, illegal as hell, and anti-American as they may be. The DHS has just released a statement indicating that anyone who refuses to submit, like a good little slave, to the restrictions and take the experimental mRNA poke might be a potential terrorist. And yes, they're even entertaining the idea of interstate restrictions on travel for the new subhuman, a.k.a. unvaccinated people, something a whole lot of us have been suggesting was in the cards, at least since we started to read scripture. And yeah, says Smith, it's at the top of my list of items that will trigger the oh-so-long-anticipated civil war. Everything those of us in the alternative media have been warning about over the past 18 months in terms of medical tyranny is now coming true. No, it's hardly conspiracy theory, it's conspiracy reality. The Biden regime, he adds, will certainly try to announce new vaccine passport requirements at the federal level in the near future. So is the plan to bring U.S. troops and maybe even private contractors, or perhaps, folks, even blue-helmeted UN and other foreign troops on shore, in order to help enforce various illegal directives through martial law? There's certainly a high probability of what he calls a soft secession of red states and counties if the mandate farce continues. And with U.S. troops being majority conservative, at least those that haven't yet resigned, there's hope that they won't comply and that they have no interest in fighting yet another insurgency made up this time of their own people. We'll all just have to wait and see on that score. Or, he continues, could it be that there is another war on the way, already designed to siphon off able-bodied Americans to fight in some other foreign hellhole when they otherwise might decide to fight for freedom in the USA? He talks about the buildup of the Pacific and the distractions there. Your host can't help but think, hey, what's the whole point of vaccinating an entire American force, the total force, as at least one U.S. Navy officer put it, in some great big ridiculous experiment, when almost zero of them are actually at risk anyway, and to thus put the entire nation's military at the minimum at risk, unless the intent is to disable them so that they're not able to fight against whatever satanic powers are actually pulling the marionette-in-chief's puppet strings. Now, let's not forget, continues Brandon Smith, that a regional conflict with China or any other country at this stage would completely undermine the already fragile and pretty much on the edge anyway U.S. economy and global supply chain, not to mention further devalue the U.S. dollar and increase the already rampant price inflation to a crippling degree. It was already coming, folks, but the next blow in this increasingly "Oh, you've got to be kidding me" sequence may just be the final one. Concludes Brandon Smith, "What has me most concerned, though, again, is the speed at which all of this is being implemented. Your host has suggested that if they know the alternative is to hang from the end of a rope until they are dead, 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 no wonder they're doubling down and obviously playing for keeps. But in my latest articles," he says, "I've outlined the fact that the government and corporate establishment is bombarding the public with propaganda on the vaccine passports and various other idiocies masquerading as COVID restrictions at a level not seen since the height of the pandemic back last January. It's as if they must get all of these measures in place real soon now, by the end of this year, or real close. By extension, the exit from Afghanistan also seems like a scramble. Maybe it's because the resources being used there are needed elsewhere in that same time frame. So if and when all the smoke clears, the one thing that does seem to be obvious is that the establishment, the deep state, the swamp critters, are all making preparations for another crisis in the very near term. And the cataclysm in Afghanistan is beyond the pale. No, they may be really stupid, they're certainly really evil, but come on, is anybody truly this incompetent? Or isn't it pretty obvious that there's something else at play here? And we're going to see what that is, no doubt about it, real soon.